Good morning. We're keeping it real, and I'm Lisa Loving. Our guests are Jerry Kelly and Beth Blumklotz and Kirby Lewis of Supporting Our Society. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Their mission statement is to provide resources and opportunities in a responsive manner that will build stronger communities, promote equality, and empower individuals and their families. To reach out and identify ways to help and support our local community and provide solutions that can have a long-lasting impact, and to focus on making a positive effort for communities in the greater Portland-Vancouver area by developing and sustaining a momentum that helps us affect change. It's just a joy to have you on the air. Let's start with a general overview of what you do at SOS. Does anyone want to pitch in with that?
Okay, thank you, and I'm Beth. We are a nonprofit 501c3. We are six ladies. We are good friends and family by choice, and we all have unique personalities, and we've just kind of come together over the years and just done different things. If we learned about a friend or a family member or coworker who needed something, and so we would just kind of, oh, well, let's see what we can find. Let's see what we can do. And so we just keep doing that every month, every year. That's kind of what we do.
So I'd like to add to it a little bit. Like Beth said, we've been friends. Most of us have known each other all of our lives. Beth, Kirby, and I, we were in the fifth grade class together. So we grew up together. Irvington.
Where was that? Oh, Irvington.
We were in Irvington fifth grade class together. Most of us grew up together, with the exception of Michelle Davis, who kind of migrated to Oregon, some 15 years ago or so, and she's become our sister friend ever since. And so, 10 plus years ago, we got together and supported a family friend in a coat drive, a very small kind of family-oriented coat drive that he did every year. I wanted to send a shout out to him. Rest in peace, Charles Bryant. He has passed away. But I kind of, at that time, just kind of organized some family and friends, because we all are so very close knit, to just kind of come together, have some breakfast, and everybody bring a coat. Everybody bring a coat and support this drive. And so it was a nice turnout, and he invited us to come and help distribute some of these coats and some of these items that he had collected. And we just immediately kind of got the bug and got the desire to help and support our community. And we just kind of took the ball from there and ran with it. We started to develop our own coat drive. We expanded. We got the community involved in terms of small businesses, barbershops, beauty shops, collecting coats, businesses. And every year it has just grown from there. So, you know, it has grown from just a small family-oriented to last year, I believe we served over 450 families.
And I wanted to ask you more about that. The people that your program serve, what are they facing? What are they dealing with?
A lot of our community, they are experiencing houselessness. And so when we first started, where Jerry was sharing, when we helped out with Charles Bryant, it was on Southwest 2nd and Burnside. And so, you know, the elements in December, it's cold, windy, rainy. And we were out there. We would, we had tables set up. And we actually decided to separate everything by size and, you know, women's coats, men's coats, children's. So it would be more of a shopping experience. And we would have lines around the block, across mm-hmm. the street. And as Jerry said, like, our family and friends would get involved and help us out to help Charles Bryant and what he and his wife were already doing. And so the first few years that we did it, it was outside. And now our, I don't know if it's clientele necessarily, but the people we serve, it's a combination. Those who are experiencing houselessness, as well as those who could just use extra assistance. So we have families coming in, and we're indoors now, which feels really nice. So people can take their time, and they'll get new socks and hats and everything.
We also, and this started with COVID, because we had to switch up with COVID. We couldn't have so much of the personal connection and that type of experience. So we kind of shifted to hygiene products, where we could give them a pack of hygiene products. And we found that that was also very necessary and useful. So we added that to our warm weather kind of products with coats and blankets and scarves and hats. But we're able to provide that at our distribution. But being out in the community, we are also able to provide students with coats. We're able to provide people, community members, with coats. We keep them in our cars. So we are sprinkling, you know, the community with coats and with products that are necessary, hygiene packs, when we're able to do that.
When you are out there, are your participants find you? Are you building networks of people that you serve all the time, or how do people know to come?
You know, the word of mouth in terms of SOS supporting our society has grown so much over the years. You know, getting the community involved. I really look at it like we are the vehicle between our donors and our recipients. And so getting the community involved, allowing them the opportunity to have a box at their small business or at their job site, so that they might not necessarily have the interest or the ability to go out and be on the ground to give out these coats or these products, but they may be able to find something in their home or make a small purchase and contribute. So we've been able to connect with the community in that way, so that we can get them involved. And then that helps with the word of mouth. So Beth, being part of the Portland Public School system, she comes in contact with maybe some students, maybe some families who may need some coats, maybe some products. And then she brings that information back to SOS, and then we try to make that happen for them.
I was stunned by what a wide community of community supporters you have. And there's a list of them on your website, which is supportingoursociety.org. And you've got small businesses, you've got churches, you got my health system, Cascadia Garlington Center, woo! and even X-Ray Radio, right? How did you build that community?
Well, a lot of building relationships is just a part of being friends and being family with people and being genuine. When someone is, you know, asking you, hey, how's it going? Giving a genuine answer, you know, not just saying, oh, I'm fine, and keep moving. Or on the reverse, if we ask, hey, how are you doing? You know, pausing long enough for you to be able to say how you really are doing. Because you just never know what somebody may be going through, and they may not be going through anything heavy, and they just want to share joy with you, and it, you know, so that's always feeling good as well. So those relationships, we get a lot of referrals. Mm-hmm. People who will say, oh, hey, I know so-and-so at such-and-such, let me connect you. But even for brand new relationships, a shout out to Rose City Self-Storage and Wine Vaults. That's where we use our we use for storage to keep all our items year round, if you know, as we're collecting. But when we first started, we actually contacted them out of the blue and said, hey, we just need a storage unit for 30 days. And they were like, okay, no problem. They gave us a storage unit. They didn't know us from anything, but they liked what we were doing when we told them we need to throw everything in there, sort it out in the hallway, we'll clean everything up, and then we'll be gone once we have our distribution and give everything away. And it's just grown from there, and they've been so supportive of us that when we needed a storage unit year-round, they said, hey, we've got one for you. And so we're their sponsor for mm-hmm. us. And just relationships, whether we know people or brand new, they've been really unique and authentic.
I think another way we've grown in our support is we've been very willing and interested in supporting other nonprofits, mm-hmm. other organizations, because we understand the importance of the wraparound services. And so when we reach out and offer support for other services, other nonprofits, that kind of comes back around to us. Then they reach out, give us support or referrals. And so, you know, that has helped out a lot. And I just think that with our community, that's important. Not one organization, not one nonprofit can do all of the work. It takes a group. It takes group efforts.
A network. Mm-hmm. I bring that up because I know that there are people listening who might be thinking about trying to do a community project. And sometimes it comes as a surprise that you could maybe get on the phone and call someone directly and say, can you help me with this? And they might say yes. So I just want people to have that positivity of thinking when it comes to some community project that they may want to also pursue, because I think that's amazing. Yeah.
Well, definitely to encourage someone, hopefully, is when you call and ask, maybe share with the person or the organization what it is you're wanting to do, and then ask them if they know of anyone who could help. And then a lot of times it takes off the pressure, and that person may say, oh, you know what, I have XYZ resources, or I know so-and-so has XYZ resources as well.
Also, it only takes a small group. You could get a group of a couple of girlfriends, a couple of friends, a couple of family members who just may want to get together and offer some support. I was talking to a coworker the other day, and they just get together as a family, very informal, and they either come across a family in need throughout the year or hear about a family, and they just kind of get together and provide a couple of gifts for them during the holidays. That's all it takes sometimes. And so it's about the community coming together and just really supporting each other. Our community really needs that. We need more of that.
Beth, a few minutes ago, you said what I think of as the J word, joy. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, but when I'm moving through the planet, I don't know, these days, they just seem so... Sometimes it seems so dark or even scary that I just start looking for joy. Mm-hmm. Have you found joy in this work? Can you talk about that?
Absolutely. It motivates me so much. I have a problem when I wake up in the middle of the night. My mind just starts clicking. What can I do? What can I do? I need to get this done. I got to do that. And I feel like I add two or three things to my list every single day by 6 a.m., but I'm motivated because it feels good. It feels really good. And a lot of things that we do as an organization supporting our society, and I do personally, we don't tell everybody what we've done. And that feels really good because then, you know, it's an inside joy that shines out. And it's not a trying to get a certain accolade or a certain bit of attention. Joy for me is definitely how I feel motivated.
Yeah, the self-gratification that I feel just by helping somebody, just by doing something positive, making a difference in somebody's life is huge for me. I have a son who is on the spectrum, and for me, getting out, getting him out to be involved with the community, and it becomes a social aspect, and you know, just the joy that I get seeing him interact and communicate with the community is huge. And so like Beth said, it's not about you know, what type of rewards we can receive. It's just, you know, the self-gratification.
And I definitely, you know, I recognize more and more as I've gotten older that the relationships between those who are doing, so maybe the six of us, we're doing a lot of physical activity on this nonprofit and to support our community. Well, someone who writes a check or someone who orders coats and socks and hats and then drops them off to a box, they are equally participating. And we need everybody. You know, it doesn't have to be everybody creating something, you know, a project to do. People who are giving, if they're able to and they have the funds, that's great. They're equally important. You know, I've had the opportunity to go to some larger fundraisers these last couple of years, and I love seeing people, you know, they're donating, you know, hundreds of thousands in some cases of dollars, and they are so happy to do it. And they feel the same as maybe when I donate $100, you know, and it feels great. So we're definitely, it's a puzzle piece. Mm-hmm. We're all in the picture. You know, no one is excluded. No one's better or worse, you know, depending upon their role.
We are talking with Jerry Kelly and Beth Blumklotz and Kirby Lewis of Supporting Our Society. And you're listening to Keeping It Real. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. As you move through the communities, this is kind of a hard question. Where do you see the greatest need?
For me, it's kindness. It really is. But I feel like kindness is in now. You know, I used to always get made fun of, and I say that lightly, but get made fun of all the time. Oh, Beth, no, there's not a nice side to this. No, you can't make it better, or, you know, come on. And I feel like kindness is in, you know, and when we are kind, if we see someone who maybe, even if we can't help them in the moment, but to still have that eye contact and say hello, mm-hmm. what it does, you know, they kind of stand up a little bit more. They feel seen. They feel heard.
Mm-hmm. That's very important. I think that for me, some of the work that we're doing, and I'm sure we will talk more about this, but the, you know, making an impact with our youth, in my opinion, right now are in somewhat of a crisis, and they need all of the support they can get, whether they have families or not. They need the support of their community, the understanding of their community, and I believe that if we don't continue to try to make a difference for our youth, there will be continued issues.
When I was looking through your website, I saw the Butterfly Program. Can you talk about some of your youth work?
Mm-hmm. So the Butterfly Program, that started, again, COVID. COVID was, you know, just unexpected, obviously, and it just made a huge impact mentally in a lot of different areas, specifically with our young ladies. Our young ladies of color kind of fell through the cracks. They experienced a lot of mental, they experienced just a lot of mental depression and a lot of loss. We were able to have a kind of a luncheon and recognize and acknowledge a group of young ladies, just kind of letting them know that they matter, that, you know, they are special and we haven't forgotten about them. And initially, it was just going to be a kind of a one-time thing, but it was so well received, and it was so you know, we could just see the joy in their face and their families and the young ladies, that we immediately realized that this is necessary. We decided to continue with the program and then just actually create the program. We didn't know what the program was going to look like. We created the program with the vision of just establishing a space where young ladies can be comfortable, showing them and teaching them and mentoring them that they're important. And that they are recognized and appreciated. From there, we kind of got involved in the juvenile justice system, working with young ladies, justice impacted teens and youth. And that was kind of a whole nother realm. And then we realized that these ladies also very much in need of mentorship and in need of some support of women who look like them, who've been through some experiences and who can help them navigate and kind of turn some things around. And so we are maybe a couple of years in now of the Butterfly program. We have a whole kind of spectrum of girls with supportive families that just may be shy and need a little bit of outlet. Girls who have maybe single parents who have a couple of jobs just trying to make ends meet and need that mentorship and support. Girls who are parents are incarcerated and are in the foster system. So the whole spectrum, just trying to make an impact and make a difference in these young ladies' lives.
When you are with the young women in your program, what do they have to say? I mean, you must be listening to them. What are they thinking about? What do they need?
Well, at first, what I notice is there's a lot of guards. There are a lot of guards that are up. They're wondering if we're going to be consistent, if we're just saying something and then we're going to disappear. And then after they, you know, they've come a few times. We had a 6-week program that we've done twice, and that was really successful. It was challenging for us, and we grew a lot as well, because like Jerry said, we didn't really know when we started working with the young ladies exactly how we were going to move forward at first. And so the first couple of groups that we had, the first sessions, we were meeting every Saturday, and it was an adventure for sure. And but the girls, they open up when they realize, okay, these old ladies really do care about us. Not that we think we're old, of course, but you know, they're but they're like, oh, okay, they do care about us and they're still here. And I'll be honest, not every young lady finished. Not every young lady came back when the session was over. But we have some who have. And how amazing it feels that they're like, what are we doing next month? When are we going to get together again? And so then they do talk now, the ones who have stayed. And even during those 6 weeks, mm-hmm. As they get comfortable, they're talking about everything, school, grades, families, relationships, a lot of relationships, a lot of boy talk. We even have, you know, some who are wondering about their sexuality, you know, having some questions. So it's really serious. And at the same time, it feels amazing. We're kind of like the fun aunties in their family. We want to be an extension of their community. We're not trying to replace anyone. We want to be supportive to the parents. And we have where the parents are like, wow, they're so much better. They're so much better at home. They're not as mouthy. Because think about it, you know, girls in teenage years, that's when we're the most mouthy. You know, we know everything. And so that's who we're working with. the teenage girls. And we just want them to be able to see their reflection in us, be around other women who are African-American and who are happy, who are enjoying their lives. And as we go through things that are difficult, when we go through challenges, you know, so they can see how we handle our challenges. Because we're talking, we're sharing with them as well. We're not just asking them to share with us. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, again, when you talk about the bonds and the connections, we've been connected most of our lives. They see that. When you talk about the referrals of our program, this butterfly program has really grown in the referrals, working with juvenile justice. The young ladies are speaking in front of the judges about their experience with the butterfly program. The judges are asking for some of the young ladies to be mandated in working with the butterfly program.
Okay, because I was going to ask, what is mandated?
Mandated meaning part of their probation to go through this 6-week program. So, you know, these are things that are in the works, and but it's a testament to, you know, what our program is doing and where it's going. And so that feels good. You talk about the joy. That feels good. That feels rewarding. And like Beth said, it's hard work. It's work that a lot of people don't necessarily want to touch. A lot of people don't really, these young ladies aren't the ones that, give you the warm and fuzzy all the time. And so it's not easy to deal with, but it's necessary. And it's rewarding when you see them take those steps in the right direction.
I wanted to say, on your website, it says that on the butterfly program is helping people improve grades and school attendance. School attendance is one of the secretly biggest problems that our state faces, just getting the kids to go to school. And there's a surprising number of obstacles there to reduce disciplinary infractions, prevent police interactions, discourage gang participation, improve safety awareness. That one is so big. There's just so many. Can you just talk about that a little bit? We sometimes, and I'm from the United States, and sometimes we demonize children. Sometimes we're afraid of them. But the kids, they themselves are not always safe. Can you just talk about what do they face out there? What is making them unsafe?
Oh, gosh. It's really tough. Some of the girls that we have, you know, just generally speaking, have been through some unimaginable situations. And I'll step back a little bit and talk about, we can only do so much. And so the need for those wraparound services are huge. So getting the girls also involved in the importance of, you know, that counseling, that support, the therapy, different things like that, so that whatever traumas, whatever they encountered, they can work through that along with our mentorship. We do not claim to be therapists or social workers. We are mentors, and we're there for them. When they're having an issue with a boyfriend, they will give us a call and, you know, cry on our shoulders. When, you know, they are, you know, have their cycle and accidentally at school and they'll give us a call. These are some of the things that we're here for. Or when they get in trouble and, you know, they need to hear that that's not right. These are some of the things. But, some of the things that these young ladies have been through is just terrible. And, you know, I'm going to mention this because this is very important to mention. We actually lost one. We lost one. I want to send I don't want to call it a shout out, but
a message of love.
A message of love. We lost a young girl, Honesty Jones, And she was very special. She was very, very special. And she was very connected to us in the program in the short time that we knew her. And, you know, she had been through a lot in her young life, but I could see the potential. And sometimes they just need to get through that hurdle. And she was not fortunate enough to get through that hurdle, but I think about her often, and she is one of my motivations to continue with the program, because I just want to see most of these girls get past that hurdle so that it can be a testimony for them of this is what happened to me when I was in my teens, but this is where I'm at now.
For people who are just tuning in right now, our guests are Jerry Kelly and Beth Blumklotz and Kirby Lewis of Supporting Our Society. Kirby is taking all the video and the side, so she's here. She's working right now. I want to keep going through that list because there's so many interesting things on this list of what the Butterfly Project does. Embrace cultural awareness, encourage healthy behaviors, promote self-love and self-respect, participate in a youth-led project. Can you talk about that? What youth-led project are you working on?
Well, right now we have our 10th annual winter weather essential drive and distribution, which is what we talked about at the beginning, and they are helping with that. And they've helped with sorting, they've helped with collecting. We've had pop-ups at different parks in the Northeast and North area. They've come, they've handed out flyers. So they practice talking with people, eye contact, being able to, you know, share their thoughts. And sometimes they would come back giggly. Sometimes they would come back like, where they seem like they feel indifferent about it, but we can see where their self-esteem and their self-respect grows each time they're participating with us with these different activities. And with their own, when we had these six-week sessions, we had a hygiene drive for women, and they decided to do it, and they decided what we needed to collect. And we would, of course, you know, give them ideas of additional items if they hadn't thought of something, but it was really, they led it. And then we did a back-to-school drive that they wanted to do, and they even went to the Salvation Army and helped to give out items and help. And so they got to see others who look like themselves coming in and donating, as well as coming in to receive. And so they're seeing more and more that they are a part of a community that's greater than their household or their school, or maybe the bus they drive or they ride. And it's really amazing seeing when their mind is just really opening up. And it does help them with going to school, because then they feel proud. Mm-hmm. They feel like they're a part of something greater, that a lot of times they feel like everybody else is a part of something greater and they're just the only ones who are not. Mm-hmm. When we all have friends, and some of us have friends and family, like multicultural, and we recognize, though, as being women of color, there's still a difference when we show up sometimes in certain environments. And so one of my motivations is I want these girls to know that if they're sitting in a classroom and they're the only person who looks like them, or if they are on a team and they're the only person who looks like them playing soccer, you know, playing volleyball or tennis or something, that they can still do it regardless of how anyone else treats them or what they say to or around them. And we want them to know that their community goes beyond their parents, because of course your parents say, oh, I love you, you're beautiful, you're this and that. And we're like, yeah, but your mom, your dad, of course you're going to say that. So having someone who doesn't know them and didn't see them grow up to support them, it just gives them a confidence that you can't just get all by yourself. And that's something that it improves grades. It improves, you know, again, the self-respect. It improves relationships. Like they won't tolerate as much of the game playing, you know, with the boys they've been interested in. And because even a couple of the girls have even shared, oh, I don't like him anymore. And we're like, why? Oh, well, he was too, whatever it was that they weren't thinking about before. Mm-hmm. Maybe he was, you know, just playing around, not following through, whatever it is. And we share with them, there are some wonderful boys out there. Not everybody is like that. You know what I mean? So, and it's just, it feels good to be an extension of their community. Mm-hmm. And
so I want to say, in terms of the projects, what I noticed, and this felt really good, because initially they started the program. These are the girls from Juvenile Justice. They started the program, and we partnered with another organization, again, kind of collaboration. So we partnered with another organization, the Earn to Learn Project. And so they were paid a stipend for the six-week program. And so they were paid based on their attendance. And so initially it was, when am I going to get my money? I need my money. And so it was, you know, it was more about their money. And I get it. And so, but the relationship was built. They learned, they grew in their community awareness. And so now their continued involvement with us is not about the money. There is that money is run out. That piece of the program or that collaboration is not part of their continued involvement with us. But yet they're still showing up. They're still involved, and they're, what are we doing next? Is what they say. And so that feels good, because it's more about the connection with us and what they can do with their community. And like Beth said, it kind of opens up their mind to, well, what they were doing before, some of the things that they were doing before become somewhat irrelevant. And also very, very important, using their time. I think that's one of the things that our youth have, they have too much time on their hands, and occupying some of their time productively is important, because then they are able to say, wow, you know, I spent, you know, half of the day at the park interacting with people. I made these connections. I met this great person. I met this nice person. I had this great conversation with somebody. Whereas before, nobody would even talk to them because of how they looked or how they act or the company that they kept. So they are beginning to open up and expand who they are as an individual. And it's just making a difference.
This might be a difficult question, but as you're working with these young women, do you ever visualize what they might do in the future? Like, how is the impact of what you're doing now, planting these seeds in their youth?
Absolutely. I'm really glad you asked that question, because I was just thinking about one of our butterflies. She was saying she wanted to be a nurse. And she has kind of flip-flopped, you know, when we first met her. Kind of, oh, well, I don't care. Oh, I don't know. Well, maybe. Whatever. You know, just not wanting to really get attached to any outcome. And I believe she was fearful of wondering if it could actually happen. And so now that she's gotten to know us, and she's even said, well, we're family. And it just sends chills, brings tears to your eyes. It's just when someone who didn't know you from anything, who a teenager, they're so guarded and so they've been feeling judged for so long that they judge everybody else around them, and it's hard for them to give anybody an opportunity to love on them, because mm-hmm. they're shattered for whatever reason, whatever they've been through. But this one, just even a couple weeks ago, she's like, yep, I'm ready. I want to really look into what I need to do to become a nurse, and I'm going back to school. And she's talking about what's the best route. Should she go to night school? Should she go back to her local high school? And I promise you, when we first met, I would not think that today was happening this fast. It's just been
it's amazing.
4 or 5 months, maybe. It's amazing. And so some of them, they have different dreams for different things. And so we like to expose them because they don't, not everyone knows what they want to do just yet. So I just wanted to share that we've taken the girls to OMSI. We went and saw the Da Vinci exhibit. That was a year and a half ago. We eat out. They like to eat. I will say that. They
they do like to eat. But what we've realized and what we recognized is not just the eating,
right.
But it's an opportunity for them to express themselves amongst us and also now their peers. They feel comfortable. It's probably where they've shared the most. They've been the most vulnerable and expressed themselves. They've, you know, shed many tears and been very open. So we have realized and we recognize that it's not just about the eating. It's about, you know, and how many families, how many people these days really sit around the table and have a dinner, a meal? They probably don't do it very often. So I think they look forward to that. And so we will continue to do that.
I think that when you break bread together, that's a real thing. And it builds surprising connections. What were you going to say?
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And we had the one who actually wants to be a nurse. So she had a birthday, and she also was getting off of probation soon. And so we said, well, what would you like to do? And she said, I want to do something. I want to make pottery. And we're like, okay. So I met a couple through some family, one of my brothers, and they have a studio in their home. And so we took the young butterfly, and all six of us went, mm-hmm. and we scheduled a session, and they taught us how to make pottery, and we spun and mm-hmm. did everything on the wheel and got dirty, and it was so much fun. And the butterfly, you could just see she was so happy. It was almost like there were moments where she was in it, she was present, and she's making her pottery, and she did great, by the way. And then she would stop and just look around and like, wow, this is all for me,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's things that we would do for our own children, and we just feel like, and that's where the donations and, you know, we apply for grants and different things where it really comes to help out, because we used to do everything just out of our own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But people have really gotten on board to help us out. So we did the pottery. Phenomenal experience. It was mm-hmm. great. And that was at Spirit Pots with Kit and Mari.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That was great.
Yes.
That was great. And we've done, last Sunday, we went to Portland Art Museum. We wanted them to see Black Artists of Oregon exhibit.
There's a great big exhibit that Intisar Abioto curated. It's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. It was fantastic because some of the girls, they didn't realize we have artists here, local, because they're looking at people who look like them, and they're thinking, oh, they might be into music or sports, or they might be, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, but not one of them had actually thought about a Black artist.
Mm.
So that was awesome mm-hmm. to even just see. And I remember talking to one of the butterflies, and I said, yeah, this artist lives here in the state of Oregon. And she was just like, really? So just you know, expanding their community, opening their minds as much as we can.
Mm-hmm. And it feels exciting for us to be able to just have the opportunity to expose them to what we may consider regular things, but are brand new things for them. It feels good. You know, I was thinking about it, and because we've been friends for so many years, you know, we've had our time where we would just go to happy hour and we would just go to dinner and stuff. And we will continue to do that. But it's nice. It's still quality time for us. And so we are still enjoying each other and bonding, but we have our butterflies with us. And so it feels good. And so we just hope that we will continue to be able to do that. Obviously, you know, we will need to continue to have the funding, and hopefully we will continue to be supported with that, because again, it's just very important.
I want to come back around and say, you've had quite a journey, mm-hmm. right? Coming from coat drives mm-hmm. to helping with teens in the criminal justice system on probation. Was there a turning point? Was there some part when you went, you know, we're going to do more than just putting garments on the table? We're going to really get involved, because that's a huge investment.
Mm-hmm. I think, well, for me, what I noticed was when Jerry had met a young lady who was creating boxes to give to young ladies. I don't know if you want to talk about that. You already touched on it a little bit, but that's when I noticed, okay, we're doing something different. We all invited one butterfly and her grandmother or mother or aunt.
So again, it just kind of comes around to, I'll just speak for myself, always being open to get involved with what's going on in the community. And so it was just an opportunity to support somebody else. And with COVID, recognizing that, oh gosh, you know, yeah, these young ladies really need some support. I always felt like when we started with the coat drive, and we did that for several years of, you know, not even as a nonprofit, just volunteering. But I always felt like we would kind of go where we were led as a nonprofit, just because you just never know. Again, I keep going back to COVID and, you know, that changing so many things, and who knows what's going to happen in the future. So we have somewhat of a vision. I mean, we want to help the community. We want to help our Black and Brown youth. But we also are very open to being directed based on what happens with the community.
Oh, yes, and with our distribution, so we have one coming up on December 2nd, and that'll be at Montevilla Community Center on Northeast Gleason and 82nd. At each distribution, even though we are six African-American ladies, we serve everybody, mm-hmm. every single person who comes through, you know, and these people, families or those experiencing houselessness, they're waiting around the corner of the building. And it is heart tugging mm-hmm. for sure. It is, you know, we're hustling, we're running around sometimes literally trying to make sure we get everybody in as quick as we can, so they're out of the cold, and then get them a coat, get them fresh socks, get them hats, gloves, everything that they could use. And, you know, we provide a light lunch. We want them to, you know, not, you know, because if they're needing all socks, they're probably needing something to eat as well, you know. So, and we don't care what anybody looks like. You know, the butterfly program, we're more culturally specific, you know, mm-hmm. focusing on the Black and Brown for sure.
Mm-hmm. Was there someone who inspired you to start this, or inspired you at any point?
Well, for me, it's definitely my dad. My mom, yes, they're a great couple. My mom was definitely quieter, and so she's always just very supportive quietly and just there and present. My dad passed 30 years ago, October, and we used to, like, he was a psychologist, and he could have been like a private sector psychologist, and he tried it. I don't know how long. I don't remember. I was young, but he did try it. It wasn't for him. He really enjoyed the public sector. He called what other people would call patients, he called them his clients. And he worked with adult mentally ill. mostly on Martin Luther King, which was back at the time was Union. And I was just around it. You know, Thanksgiving, we would serve meals and we would sit and, you know, eat with them as well. I would go visit him at work. He was just very giving of time and energy wherever possible. He actually collected clothes from friends and would give them to his clients because they would, you know, often need. One thing that we've noticed is that with people using, you know, drugs, a lot of times they get hot and they're taking off their clothes and then they come down, they're cold. And so, you know, but I would love to talk to him about it and see what parallels mm-hmm. are, you know, that I'm experiencing, that he experienced, but definitely inspiration. I think about him every day and, you know, for sure, and talk to him like, okay, what do we do in here? What do we do there? So I feel like he's with us for sure.
For me, I experienced a lot of loss at a young age, a lot of family loss. And at a very young age, as a young adult, I chose to live my life in honor of them because they could not. And I've kind of done that. I feel very lucky and fortunate that I've had along the way a strong support system. I have a very strong family. My parents have been very supportive. I have a very close connection with my brother. I have great children. I have a husband who's supportive, and he's a very strong, strongly connected to the community. I have great brother and sister-in-law who are very supportive in everything that we do. But really, I also... the connection with the ladies, you know, we're family. And so, you know, we are, you know, this journey would not be the same without them.
We are starting to run out of show, and I wanted to be sure to take a moment to ask if you have any volunteers, staff, participants that you want to shout out right now.
Well, what keeps coming to me is we recently received a grant, and I want to give a shout out to CVI, Community Violence Intervention and Prevention Grant. Their grant has really helped us out to be able to do more activities with our butterflies, and where we don't have to worry as much about, you know, the kind of activity. We could go to the museum, or we could go, you know, to OMSI, and, you know, just different activities, and we can just pay for it. So that's such a blessing. We really appreciate them and their support of us and trusting us. Businesses who've had boxes and collected with, so their customers are basically supporting what they believe in and supporting us. So it's just been such a blessing. TriMet has been fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just dropped off a collection box yesterday, and we'll drop off another one today. They have at least 20, 25 volunteers who come help us distribute every year. This is like the fourth year, I think it is, fourth or fifth year. My transportation coworkers, every year they're involved. Will be November 18th at Broadway Bar and Grill from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. If anyone wants to drop off a coat or make a monetary donation, we're 501c3, so we can give you a receipt, all of that. Boys and Girls Club, they were wonderful, and they donated their space to us this summer. So we had our 6-week sessions at their location and
on MLK,
the Blazers Boys and Girls Club. Mm-hmm. You want to mention any?
Well, I would like to say also at SWIM, my job, they support us on the Southwest Washington side by collecting items every year, and we donate those to the Share House in Washington, in Vancouver, because, you know, that's important as well. And Beth pretty much covered most of that. You know, our supporters are, you know, they continue to grow.
They do. And I just really want to say real quick, if we missed out anyone, I'm so sorry. We love you. We appreciate you. We have lots of family and friends who come out every single year, and they donate, or they help out the distribution, or and we were here because of them. We're able to continue because of everyone's involvement.
And that was my next question. How can our listeners participate with you?
So we have, as you mentioned, our website, supportingoursociety.org. We have email. I believe all of this is listed on the website, so that way I don't mess anybody up trying to figure out what letters I'm saying. Feel welcome to contact us by email. We're all on Facebook. Some of us are on there more often than others, but we have a Supporting Our Society -SOS on Facebook. We also have a Supporting Our Society on Instagram. Our presence is more felt on Facebook. Messenger us. We will respond. And any kind of donations, we have Cash App, we have Venmo, we accept, you know, just whatever. And again, 501c3, we're happy to give you a write-off. And the funds go towards the Butterfly Program as well as the coat drive and distribution that we do every year. Yeah.
I just want to thank you again for being with us on the air.
Thank you for having us. This has been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to our guests, Jerry Kelly, Beth Blumklotz, and Kirby Lewis of Supporting Our Society. Connect with them online at supportingoursociety.org. You're listening to Keeping It Real with Lisa Loving on KBOO Portland. You can make a contribution to support programming like this at kbu.fm/give or text KBOO to this number, 44321. Special thanks to KBOO Public Affairs Director Ender Black and Program Director Asia Hawthorne for making this all possible. Get involved by emailing volunteer@kbu.fm. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 on your FM dial.
This is Bird Note. While a bird's eye view lets a migratory songbird like this European robin keep track of important landmarks along its route, a special protein in its eyes might let it see Earth's magnetic field. It's like a hiker using a compass to find true north. As European robins get closer to migration, their eyes produce more of a light-detecting protein called a cryptochrome. Non-migratory birds have this eye protein too, but at lower levels. To understand why migratory birds might need more of this protein, scientists compared the cryptochrome proteins from European robins, birds that do migrate, to those from chickens and pigeons, birds that don't migrate. They found that only the robin's cryptochrome changed its behavior in the presence of a weak magnetic field. This feature could make the bird's field of view appear darker in the direction of a magnetic field line, letting them visualize which way is north. Pigeons do have a magnetic mineral called magnetite embedded in their beaks. So, even though they may not be able to see magnetic fields, they can detect them. This is what makes homing pigeons so good at finding their way back home. Birds on the move may use one or both ways of sensing magnetic fields. For Bird Note, I'm Mark.
In the ground, I'd root that mountain.
Thank you. listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings